Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 26th on the West Coast, now August the 27th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We know because of tonight's guests, we have a huge audience on Wind Talkers Radio Network, so we want to welcome all you folks for tuning in. Thank you for tuning in. And I'm going to go straight ahead and bring on tonight's guest. He hosts his own show on Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com. It's called A Marine's Disquisition. He is a fantastic researcher. He's a fabulous talk show host, although he doesn't consider himself one. And he has a website, amd.elequity.com, which is read by many thousands of people every day. He publishes a newsletter called News and Views on that website, free of charge. And he's my good friend and pretty much a regular guest on Thursday nights here on Evident Footprints. Former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977, Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome to the show.
And I appreciate it. And to all my Marines around the world, Semper Fi. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Drew, I have a little treat that I wanted to play for you.
As long as it doesn't have fructose in it, we'll accept it.
There's no fructose. This arrived at the last minute tonight, just a few minutes before showtime, and I was able to convert it and so we can listen to it. It's actually a video that's posted on the web. It was recorded April 24th of 2010, and it was recorded in the city of Philadelphia at the Reading Terminal Market, which is a fantastic place. If you like Italian food, they have all kinds of Italian food there. And on the 24th of April of this year, some members of the Opera Company of Philadelphia, both the cast and the chorus from La Traviata, which is a Verdi opera, went to the market to sing Brindisi, and I thought you and the listening audience might enjoy this as a change of pace. This is a live performance in the market amongst hundreds of customers there in Philadelphia.
Oh,
only in America, Drew, can people come together like that and throw their creativity out there for everyone to see and bring joy into so many people's lives. What a change. Don't you wish you were there at that market to witness that?
You know,
you may not be an opera fan. I understand.
I am an opera fan, and I'm ecstatic over the fact that only in America can people appreciate it that are opera fans, and I wonder how people in rural America look for entertainment when they can't even understand quality entertainment. Like this right here in Philadelphia, of all places.
Yeah.
And why not Philadelphia, the home of real, a real sophistication of entertainment. And, you know, I would have loved to have been there. I've been like a fly on the wall, reaching out.
Well, they were packed.
That's like starvation. You don't see entertainment, spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
Entertainment very much anymore. Now, I will admit, in Munich, Germany, many times there was some spontaneous opera singers that would go out and eat at the Hofbräuhaus or at the Englische Gardens. Many times in my tour duty as a Marine security guard there, the local opera singers on a birthday, they'd be out at the English Gardens, and they would just spontaneously stand up and do a 5-minute rendition, 4-minute rendition, and bring the house down. And that's the first I've ever heard of it happening here in the States. But it's nice to know that we have people around the world that understand that there's more to life than television.
Oh yeah, they were packed like sardines in the store, and the opera members were actually standing in the lines with the people. You know, then this music started playing, and all of a sudden they started singing, and you should have seen the looks on the people's faces. But eventually, everybody in the whole place was smiling.
Oh, I bet.
So, you know, it's a nice gesture. We want to thank Laura for sending that in. And, man, I got...
Did Laura send that to you?
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Way to go, girl. If she sent it to you, then it's sitting around in my email box, and I just hadn't seen it yet.
Well, we have to acknowledge our listeners. Now, I have something that another one of our listeners... Somebody you know, somebody I met, a former U.S. Marine by the name of Ken, sent me something which is quite a bit different, and I'd like to eventually touch upon that. There's a journalist by the name of Mary Joyce who interviewed a gentleman that was in the military some years ago. He's 80 years old now, and he has cancer, and he knows he's dying, and there's some things that he wants to get off his chest, some things that he was prevented from sharing with people. He had suffered an injury early on in his military career, and he had a severely broken ankle, and he was going to be discharged. And he pleaded to stay in the military. Well, the disclosures that he makes are off the charts. But it confirms many of the things that you and I and some others talk about when we're revealing what really goes on behind the scenes. Some may consider this earth-shattering. I don't know if you want to listen to this, if you're in the mood to hear this. I can. It's... basically in three parts.
Go right ahead. Unless you're going to show us the beheading on the radio, I'm all for it.
No, it's nothing like that, but he's going to share some pretty important information. So, okay. And I'll pause it in between the three sections here.
Okay.
All right. Here goes.
Okay, today is August 8th, 2010, and we're here with Paul Epley and his son Kendall. And the reason that we're here is because he has had some experiences in the military that he has never shared before in a very public way, and he wants to get this out to the public. And Paul, can you real quickly tell us why you've decided to get this story out?
I'm 80 year old, not much longer to go, and I'd like to help Kendall as much as I can. That's the reason why I'm getting it out.
Okay, and you feel like this will help him?
It will. Should.
It should. All right. I know a little bit about your background, so that's the reason I'll be able to ask some of these questions. First of all, tell me about your military service. What years were you in the military?
From 48 to 55.
What branch of the military?
Army.
All right. And what rank did you achieve?
I was a master sergeant, first sergeant, company commander, and worked for the government.
All right. During that time, and we're going to get right to the good stuff right off the bat, and then we'll explain some background after that. Right off the bat, go into the story of actually seeing one of the live aliens from Roswell. What I want you to do before you start is to picture that in your mind, and let's try to bring back as much detail as we can. All right? So just focus on that. Nothing else but what you saw.
All right, this is in 1950, the summer, at Camp Perry, Virginia.
How do you spell that?
Wittenberg.
How do you spell that?
Perry?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
P-E-R-R-Y.
It is? Okay.
And I went up there, Fort Hughes, a station in Fort Hughes. We were working at Camp Wallace down on the James River. And I don't know, I was with a research outfit. We built a tramway and all of this down there. Well, one day I went up to Camp Perry. I don't know. It was in the summer. I don't know exactly what date. But there was an MP guarding a bunker. And I knowed him because we served on Guam together. I went down and asked him what he was guarding. And he said, I can't show you. So I kept talking to him. And he said, all right, I'll give you a brief look at it. So he opened the door. I don't know, 15, 20 feet from me. Standing sideways. About 4.5 foot tall, and the color of it is what got my eyes to keep it, instead of looking at anything else, trying to figure out what color it was. But about 4.5 foot tall, standing sideways, I could see part of his eye look normal.
Okay, let's do the description by breakdown. First of all, what color did you determine that it was?
An orange, gray, dead looking color.
An orange gray kind of color?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Something like that, right.
Okay. And let's get into the details. You were seeing a profile of it?
No, he standing sideways to
okay.
me in
let's,
a little old cage.
All right. Let's describe the head. What did you see with the head?
Head wasn't kind of normal.
You mean like a human head?
Almost bald. Might have had a little bit of hair on it. But that's about all that I could tell.
All right. When you were looking at the profile, could you see the ear? Was it shaped like a human ear?
Ear was maybe a little different, probably the same way. No big difference that I could tell.
Okay. They stuck out just like human ears.
All right.
What about the profile on the nose? What did
I didn't see that sideways. If I could see the side of it, it looked like a normal nose.
Did it move while you were looking at it?
No. It did not move.
But you knew it was alive?
Yeah, it was alive.
How could you tell it was alive if it wasn't moving?
Just the way it was standing and everything.
It was standing.
And the guard told me, I asked him to come out. I said, it's alive. Are you rigging yourself? I said, no, that's what it is.
Okay. Did you see the hands?
One of them.
All right. And what, was it like a human hand?
Like a human hand. The fingers might have been a little longer.
As many fingers? Thumb and four fingers like we have?
He's told me before he only had four fingers.
Four fingers and a thumb?
Same as ours.
All right, what about the arm? Was it longer than a human arm or the same?
About the same.
And the legs?
Same thing.
So it looked pretty much like human beings, except smaller and skinnier. Is that right?
Yeah, but now the government got to me. I think that one of these meetings, you know, I told you that.
Right, let's not go there yet. Let's stick with the description and get that out of the way.
All right, I might forget it then. Okay, I thought of it then. But there wasn't no whole lots of differences. I could tell, of course,
did
I was looking at the color.
Did it have any clothing?
Have what?
Was it? Does it?
It had a little brief on.
A pair of briefs.
Hmm?
That's it. And you told me earlier that I heard that it was in a cage.
In a small cage.
All right. Approximately what size would that cage have been?
3 or 4.
Foot square?
Square, something like that. It's a little cage like that.
Okay. And the whole length of time that you saw this was about how long?
A couple minutes.
All right. Can anybody else think of a question as far as the description?
Chest, maybe. Was there? Did it have a normal chest?
As far as I could tell, it did, yeah.
What about the eyes?
Oh, he saw it from the side, I asked him. Oh, yeah. Can you, but do the eyes from the side look normal, like humans?
The one on the side that I seen looked normal, as much as I could tell of it.
Okay, so it was very, very much like a human being, except for the color.
How about mouth?
Mouth. I didn't get a good look at the mouth.
Okay.
Sideways, couldn't tell much.
Did you feel like he was aware of you being in there?
I believe it was.
Okay. Did you feel anything telepathically from him? All right. Now, it's your understanding that this was one of the aliens from Roswell. Is that correct?
I think now I'm pretty sure that the guard said that was the fifth one from Roswell.
Okay. And how did it get to this base that you were at? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. He said that they come from Fort Hood, Texas. And it was taking it up north somewhere.
So you're guessing it went from Roswell to Texas to where you were?
That Texas come up, went on up where it was going.
Okay.
I don't know.
Do you know anything about the facility where this was at? Was there a lot of secret things that went on there?
At Camp Perry?
Where you saw the alien.
At that time, Camp Perry was the most secret place that we had in America.
And what do you know that was going on there?
I didn't know much because I didn't stay there long.
Okay.
But I know it was a secret. You had to have top secret to get in.
So it would override something.
And what I went up there for, I thought, I can't remember what I went for.
I had to go there.
Okay. Alrighty. Alright. Now, can you give us some idea of your background in the military? Besides, you already went through the ranks, but I know you were in Korea. Can you give us an idea of some of the unusual things that you had to do for the military?
Now I'm going to pause it there for a moment, Drew.
All right.
And your thoughts on what you just heard. Now, he mentioned...
No, it sounds like an older gentleman.
Yeah, Fort Hood, by the way. He when he said Texas, he did say Fort Hood. So.
And I heard him say Fort Perry, and Fort Perry is a rifle range for the United States Army in the 1950s. It's very desolate. In the sense of what, you know, the way we would, there's no city right there by the base, okay? He sounds like he's an older gentleman that is doing his best to recollect the circumstances surrounding a confrontation with a humanoid from another planet.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I see nothing wrong in his conversations, I hope and pray that you've got more.
Oh, well, there's more about what he did, yes. found it interesting. He described the alien as orangish gray skin, pretty much same types of features as a human, other than the fact that it was 4.5 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and wearing briefs. So that's some pretty specific information. Does it prove anything? Well, he felt that he had to say something about it, that he was afforded a privilege that not many were. And the fact that this was the fifth alien from the Roswell incident, and that didn't really take place in Roswell, but they always refer to a town somewhere in the vicinity of where
in the things. Vicinity, correct.
Okay. So, if you want, I'll continue.
Yeah, please do.
And let him describe some of the other things that he did. Again, this is Paul Epley, and his son is sitting at his side there. Kendall is his name.
Some of them? Mm-hmm. Well, I done one that they claimed we couldn't do, and that was fly a plane. I was taught how to take off in a plane in 2 or 3 weeks. The captain shouldn't ever dare to. You got to work to take off, it's like driving a car. And they give me a mission, and I went ahead and done it. They told me to go down one day and get on the plane, call me down there. And then got on it, looked up the side, and it was putting something aboard it. So me and a captain had run this route a few days before. He showed me on the compass where to go and everything. And we got out over this little island in the Sea of Japan, and he told me to go ahead and hook up and jump out. And I remember
now,
telling him.
What does that mean, hook up?
Which you shoot on.
Parachute. Okay.
So he told me, said, go ahead, hook up and jump out. And I remember telling him, I said, Captain, never have jumped. He said, go ahead and jump.
First time.
So I hooked up and jumped. And I could see the plane, one motor cut off. I could see the plane going down. So I landed on this island. One time I jumped, I hit in the water. The other time I hit the beach. Which was which?
These were like practice runs?
We don't practice.
That was a practice run.
Yeah, 2 or 3 practice runs.
So that was in the afternoon today. And they come in, had a little beeper thing sitting there. And they come in and pick me up pretty early. So when they told me to go down and get on the plane, and they put them aboard, told me to take off. I looked at the gas gauge, only had a little bit of fuel. And I know exactly what they wanted. So I run this route. When I got to the island, I bailed out again. When I went back to the cabin, there was 5 of them over there bound up. 2 of them was women.
Were they Korean?
Korean, North Korean. I reckon they were North Koreans, just Koreans. But anyhow, I went ahead and bailed out. Watched the plane go down. And I sat there on an old stump till early the next morning before they picked me up, wondering if they was going to leave me out there or not. But they come and got me.
Convention next morning, right?
Yeah, it didn't come to the next morning.
So there was somebody, there were people they were deliberately trying to get rid of and make it look like a crash accident. Would you say that was correct?
That's probably what they were trying to do.
But they never explained it to you. They just gave you enough information to do the job.
Right.
Did they use you as, I'll use the hard term, did they use you as an assassin in other situations when you were in the military?
When I first went to Korea, they sent me to the prison war camp on Jeju-do Island. Sent me down there on an old fishing boat, just me and the crew. I got down there, and after a week or so, I know they was checking. That's the first thing I know. I know they was checking to see if I do what was told. They told me to go down to the back gate of the prison. That one was going to escape, not to let it. So I went down there, found a place to stand. I think I stood in that place at Danny, where I did it at the ground. But it wasn't long till one come out. I went across the end of the airstrip, I kneeled down and shot him in the back. And I didn't. They sent smoke to get out to pick him up. I don't know whether it killed him or not, but I knocked him down. And I come on back up to the base, where was that, this little piece up above the airstrip. In fact, that airstrip was so short that the American planes would not land on it. The only ones that would land there was the British planes, and British pilots would do anything. So the plane come in a couple days later and got me and took me back to Seoul, Oops on or so, whichever one's in that thing in there. And I got a jeep and went up to the 40th Infantry Division, which was on heartbreak. I'd done a lot of stuff there. I'd go out every once in a while and get a prisoner. Bring him back. They would interrogate him. Wasn't on that end, don't know what to do. But after they got through with him, they'd tell me to get rid of him. So I'd take him out, shoot him, kick over him in a ditch, throw a hand grenade in to make it look like mortar got him. Gotcha. I've done that, I don't know how many times.
Why do you think they were trying to get rid of prisoners that way?
They couldn't let them go back to North Korea when we signed that peace treaty. They know too much. They work for us.
Gotcha. They work for the U.S.?
Work for them.
So they knew too much, so they didn't want them to go back. And after they had helped the United States, they had them killed.
They had them killed.
Wow. And they had you doing that, and they kept you in the dark. They just told you the basic information, correct?
They just told me what they wanted me to know.
So you just had to follow orders because that's what soldiers have to do, correct?
Right.
That's probably haunted you, is that correct?
Bothered me a long time.
Understand.
He had to come in when he was 4 or 5 years old at night.
All right, we'll let him tell that part of the story. Go ahead.
I remember when I was 4, waking him up every single night because he would toss and turn.
With nightmares?
With nightmares, yeah. Him and my mother slept in separate beds because his nightmares were so bad. My mama was crippled. She couldn't stand to be in the bed with him. So, I slept with my mama and would get up at night and go wake him up every single night. And I laid it tonight, so he would moan and groan.
I don't think any human being wants to live with that kind of experience. Nobody wants that. I'm going to let you drop a bomb on here if you want to, because I think it's important for perhaps you personally to get it off your chest.
Okay, we're going to pause right there for a moment, Drew. There you heard him say they taught him how to fly a plane, how to take off but not land.
Yep.
Does that sound familiar?
It sure does. And it's mind-boggling. You know, you take a plane off, ladies and gentlemen, what other reason is there to learn how to take a plane and fly it but not know how to land it? They're very sinister. Very sinister.
Yes, and for his, to honor his request to remain in the Army, he was told he would be allowed to, provided he never questioned anything he was asked to do. That's written up in the story that Mary Joyce did.
He only served 7 years.
Yeah, but this was at the outset of his career. In other words, you want to stay in the military.
I understand that. I understand that. Today is a tough time just to stay in the military now. I mean, I wonder how bad it was then. Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, he described seeing them loading something on the plane. And that one incident he was describing, there were 5 Koreans, 3 men and 2 women, who were left to die on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ordered to jump. So I'm going to continue with the last part of this here.
Out of the service, as I understand it. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong. You were approached as a civilian by somebody in the government to do an assassination. Do you want to talk about that?
It was in 95. I was a guard at the new golf course that they have up here.
In Morganton.
And one night, two FBI men come up there. They parked the car, Jeep, whatever they had, up the end next to the road. One of them walked down there, and I went out and stopped him, had a rifle, stopped him, and asked him what he was doing. And he showed his badge, said he was a FBI agent. That's when the voice of the Foothills come to my house and taped it and all of this.
Is that a TV program? Or
that's a little paper here in Morganton. Not a little, pretty big one.
Okay.
They come take it and run a story on it.
All
right. And the FBI seen it. So they come to me and told me if I didn't keep my mouth shut, they would shut it up.
Well, that was about the talk they want to know about in Virginia when he was running the supermarket and went to Langley.
Okay, you want to start telling him that he can jump in?
This I don't think I've talked about. I don't know what I've talked about or not.
Is that what you're...
Doesn't matter. You just go ahead and talk. You just tell us.
It's a different story.
That's it.
Okay.
When you were running the supermarkets and they came in there and had to meet at Langley Air Force. This was before I was born. 63,
4, 5? It was 67.
67.
They come. I don't know what they call or come down our... My bookkeeper would know more about this than I do. Elmer Middleton, girl. She's probably dead now. She's about 75. But anyhow, I told her, it was Wednesday, on Wednesday, because we always play golf, and the guys come down there and fix me up, and I told them when I left, when they come, tell them I'll be back in a few minutes, I had to run up to Langley. So I got up there, went in the meeting. There was two civilians and two colonels, Air Force colonel and an Army colonel. They sat down there and talked, didn't say no name or nothing, but they talked about what all was going on in the country and that they had one person that they had to get rid of. Everybody knows who it was from the way he was talking, all this stuff in Roxville and down south and everything. He was talking about Martin Luther King. That was in 67 in the summer. And they wanted me to help them. And I told them that I had a good job raising a family and I didn't want nothing else to do with it. But they sure approached me. Tried to get me to help them.
All right. In your mind, do you feel like they were asking you to help with an assassination hit on Martin Luther King?
Right. Exactly what they wanted.
Do you have any idea why they wanted to get rid of him?
Because there's so much trouble going on with the blacks.
And they thought that would fix it?
Yeah, well, it did.
Wow. Okay. Now, I want to get unconfused here. You started to mention something in 1990 here at the golf course in Morganton.
Yeah, that was when the paper they talked about, when this story first
got
done.
Okay, so in the 90s, a local paper did a story on this.
A story on him.
And so then they came
to... Then they came a few weeks or so
later. To tell him if he didn't shut up.
To be quiet with all that.
Has your life ever been threatened before? Have you been threatened about telling about the Roswell alien?
No, but the only thing about that, you know, I told you of that officer, whoever it was, at that first meeting that we went to, they called me off to the side, put me in the room, went back there and talked to him, and he said not to mention.
He said you can talk about the alien, just don't mention your military record.
Yeah, told me to talk about the alien, not to operate. Didn't want me to talk about the military.
He said he
told me to, and that's where...
Jeff Cochran.
What was his name?
Jeff Cochran. Jeff Cochran, the MUFON meeting interviewed you for 5 minutes.
But there's something that officer told me not to say or do anything, that I'm going to be standing there beside of you and I'll punch you if you talk about it. I forgot what it was you wanted me to talk about. There's something. Dream White called me out and told me.
All right, so they were more concerned about you revealing what you did in the military than they were about you revealing about the Roswell alien. Right. Is that correct?
Right.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of that. Now, that meeting took place at Langley. So,
and ladies and gentlemen, Langley is the headquarters of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yes.
Well, we have another gentleman that came out from the Federal Bureau of Investigation just yesterday and made the comment that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was not assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald. And he documented the man that could possibly have been the one that was the trigger man and the cover-up that the agency did. We have a lot of truth that's being uncovered worldwide, Don. And I'm amazed that the American people have just moved it off to the side. I really am.
Well, yeah, they're preoccupied with watching reality shows. I mean, you can't get any more real than what this man is talking about. But you know, if you recall the investigation of Martin Luther King's assassination, don't recall hearing Langley. Do you? Do you remember that?
No, I don't ever recall hearing that. But you know, it makes sense. It's just never heard anybody mention it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this man said right up front at the top of the interview, the reason he's coming out is, you know, to afford some protection for his son, who obviously knows about all this, so, and has for some time.
Mm-hmm. His son's got to be, I think his son, he said, made a comment, he was born in the early 50s, so that would make him at the very most. 58, 59 years old.
Yeah, he looks younger than that, to tell you the truth. But who knows? Only his hairdresser knows for sure. some tidbits, but one of our listeners, Ken, sent that to me some days ago, and I decided to wait and bring this out while you were on the show just to get your feedback. I know you're aware of many similar stories that have come out from various people that were sent on certain missions. And what's the importance of this? Well, we want people to know the kinds of evil deeds that are carried out under the guise of spreading democracy and freedom.
Under the guise of spreading democracy. You got that right. It's this imperialism that they're spreading. And we've got too many lies out there, Don. We really do. Way too many lies. And I hope and pray Americans will wake up. And Ken sent that article to me as well. I was able to read through it and listen to it, and it amazes me that we as Americans have literally got ourselves in such a bind that we're allowing ourselves to be sunk into this whole abyss of lies, cover-ups, all for this new world order. And it's amazing that men and women won't stand up and do the right thing.
Well, I think some are, and you know, in this case.
Well, he's coming forth many years later. I mean, I'm talking about at the time.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I understand what you mean. I'm using this one person as an example. He's the one that had this experience. He obviously attempted to and did bring the story out. 15 years earlier. Mm-hmm. 1995, the newspaper in that area did a story, and he received a death threat mm-hmm. from the government. What kind of government is that?
Well, yeah, what kind of government? Yeah, that's the kind of government we got. We've got a government that's controlled behind the scenes by some elitist power, and who's behind them? I mean, ladies and gentlemen, it all goes back to the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, the Schiffs, the Warburgs,
DuPonts, Bushes, the Morgans,
DuPonts, the Morgans,
Bronfmans,
the Vanderbilts.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't hear the Vanderbilts' name and the Morgan's name anymore, and it laid out because their lineage has changed names, but they're still there, still the same group of people.
Yeah, it's with them. It's a bloodline thing. That's all it is. So here, you know, he describes the premeditation of the event regarding the assassinations that he performed, and then the solicitation to commit murder of Martin Luther King Jr. And his reason was, I have a life, I have a family, I have a good job, I'm supporting my family. I don't want anything to do with it anymore.
I look at the idea that he didn't want to, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. And he wants to protect his family. And the only way people can protect themselves is to come out and let the world know what they know.
Yes. Yes.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. You know, I didn't have to really hesitate as to whether or not I would use this material and inform our listeners of what this man had to share. It's posted on several websites. Somebody took the time to listen to this story on more than one occasion as well.
Uh-huh.
So it's not a question. Now, as I understand it, his record, for all intents and purposes, has been expunged so that if anybody tries to look up his military record, it's not going to show. Because they didn't, you know, they're not going to say, well, yeah, he served as an assassin. They're not going to admit that.
Yeah, I can just see that. He served, this gentleman served as an assassin. You know, that makes it, that goes over real good to the American people, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting, even though he did serve and he described it, the various experiences he had, you can presume that if you went to look up a record, you wouldn't find one. But look up one on the alleged grandfather of the current usurper in Washington, D.C., and he enlisted three times.
Oh, yeah.
Over a six-month period. I think somebody got overzealous in creating a phony record, and they all ended up in the same database and I'm speaking of Stanley Armour Dunham, the alleged enlistment on December 8th of 1941, the day after Pearl Harbor. He walked up to Fort Leavenworth and said, sign me up. Doesn't quite work that way, does it, Drew?
No, not in my world. I don't see how it's possible in the real world. But then again, you know, these people, this is where they make all their mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in a time where the truth is coming out, and probably a lot of the people that were handing out the orders in those days are no longer alive, but it doesn't negate the veracity of his statements. You can tell this man is telling the truth. I mean, he's got cancer, and he's speaking with great difficulty, and still, knowing the consequences of his speaking, he's showing enough courage to let people know what went on. So we can assume that they did find Was it James Earl Ray who was blamed for shooting Martin Luther King?
Well, that's no. James Earl Ray was that was accused of the plot. There was never any real evidence that he shot Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, I'm going by.
Yeah, I know.
With a little bit.
And the government says, "What do you mean? What evidence? We've got the confession." Well, wait a minute. I can have you. You give me 30 minutes. I don't care who you are. I need 30 minutes, and I guarantee you, in 30 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, I can have you spouting out that you were born and raised on Mars, and you married a woman from Venus, and your children were born on Pluto. So you don't tell me that there's not torture methods out there that won't leave a scar on your body. So, you know, what can I say? I just move forward, Don, and we just got to get the truth out here and let the American people ascertain what they want to believe, what they don't want to believe, and what they want to discard.
Yeah, well, he gave some pretty specific information, even though he's talking about a long time ago, and even though he's quite under the weather due to his illness.
And I never did catch that. What illness is he, other than the cancer is killing him and the dialysis that he's doing?
Well, that's what I'm referring to. I don't know of anything else, but certainly you can see he's having trouble breathing. And it takes quite a bit of his energy to get a sentence out, let alone, you know, whole paragraphs. So he's, to the best of his ability. And obviously, you know, you can see also that he suffered great post-traumatic stress disorder.
And I would say a lot of that might be because of medication that he was given, because Dr. Colas, United States, former United States Army medical doctor, has come on online in the online journal and made it very clear that tens of millions of unsuspecting American soldiers who are mired deeply in the mental health system of the United States have actually been made crazy by the use or the withdrawal from commonly prescribed brain-altering drugs that the military gives to their own men in some form to overcome psychiatric calamities in their mind. And ladies and gentlemen, these stories that I'm reporting that are against Big Pharma, they're there, they're out there. And it only takes just a little due diligence to go look that we have a problem in America. Big Pharmaceutical has gotten together with the DOD, and they're pushing drugs on our soldiers. And our soldiers are coming down with all kinds of problems, with mental distress, disorders. These psychiatric drugs that they're prescribing basically are brain-altering drugs, brain-disabling drugs. And you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, every time I pick up a paper, I see there's a Marine out there that's been killed by a cop in some mall. It's 90% of the time it's going to be, as we call it in the Marine Corps, suicide by cop. These Marines don't have they love life, and they respect the Lord, and they respect the morality of everything, But it's just overwhelming to where the point where they actually go out and attempt to cause a crime or do a crime, or and I mean actually commit crimes, knowing that sometime in the next couple of 3 hours they're going to die. But they have no, then they're not afraid of dying. It's they're afraid to live because of the mind altering drug that they're on. That's what I see, Don.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the names of those drugs are, but if they're anything like what we see advertised through the mainstream media, there are far many more side effects than benefits of taking those drugs.
Oh, yeah, I've got
over here. Suicide is one of the major ones, too.
Big time. And I've got one that's sitting right here on my desk that the VA subscribed to me. And it's, what's the name on this thing? I'm sorry, I cannot find the name on this thing, but I'll tell you one thing. When I took the caps, take one by mouth every morning and two at night. It'll wire you up, but it literally just makes a zombie out of you, ladies and gentlemen. It's called prazosin, 5 milligrams. And you want to talk about a group of pills that just take all the energy out of you. This is it. And I know at least 15 Marines at the vet center that are on this stuff. And one day a couple of them came in, and it was like they were in a trance, in a daze. And they knew where they were, but they didn't know where they were. And we don't need all of these drugs. Don, we've got herbologists. You've had them on your show. Matter of fact, you've got one that's a good friend of yours that comes on this show every other week or every so often.
Michael Anthony.
Michael Anthony. That Michael Anthony is one of those good guys, ladies and gentlemen. And you have to understand, we're the good guys. They are the enemy. And who is they? I hate to tell you people, the United States government is the enemy of the people that reside on the landmass area known as the Republic of the United States. Am I wrong? Am I out there in left field? Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you, it's not, and it's just not the United States government. It's the governments of the world, whether they be China, Russia, Swedish, Swiss, United Kingdom, Germany, Belgium, Italiano, Portuguese, Brazilian, Venezuelan, Nicaraguan, Chilean. The governments of the world are against the people. They're being controlled and manipulated by a group of elitists. That's probably the head is David Rockefeller, or what's his name on the what's the German the. Rothschild, what's the one that's alive that flew into Washington, D.C. for 9/11? I mean, to New York for 9/11 in his penthouse. And watched the penthouse. He actually sat on his penthouse drinking champagne the morning that the Twin Towers came down.
Oh, wow.
Rothschild. David, was it...
You're saying it's one of the Rothschilds?
Yeah. I don't think there's just one man controlling these governments around the world. I think there's a group of men, and the Rothschilds are at the head of the table with this group. A lot of people don't realize, Don, that that these elitist few, I mean, look at the Rothschilds. How many trillions of dollars are they worth? Period. And they have the pull power and the strings over the Chinese. All this BS that the Chinese government is in charge, that's BS. There's puppets behind the Chinese government, ladies and gentlemen, big-time puppets. And they're being the government of China puts out what they are being told to put out, just like what Obama. Obama's nothing but a big puppet and a very sorry excuse for one, I might add. Am I wrong?
No. I looked up the medication you named, Prazosin, I think is how it's pronounced. And it says it's used to relax and expand blood vessels. It's used to treat high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, or Raynaud's disease. It also says that it can be used in males for symptoms of prostate enlargement. And it goes into a little bit of superficial detail in that regard.
Oh, yeah.
Raynaud's phenomenon is described as a condition resulting in a particular series of discoloration of the fingers and or the toes after exposure to changes in temperature, cold or hot, or emotional events. Skin discoloration occurs because an abnormal spasm of the blood vessels causes a diminished blood supply to the local tissues. There's another description. Now, the side effects of this are kind of interesting.
There you go. That's what you want to see. The symptoms is what they're saying that it treats.
Yes.
Tell the audience, since you've looked this up, tell them, please, it's your show, man. Let these people know what the symptoms are.
Okay. And anyone
else? Ladies and gentlemen, take notes. This will blow you away.
Okay. Dizziness, drowsiness, headache, constipation, loss of appetite, fatigue, nasal congestion, or dry eyes may occur the first several days as your body adjusts to the medication. Inform your doctor promptly if you develop chest pain, difficulty breathing, difficulty urinating, skin rash, swelling of the hands or feet, ringing in the ears. Males, though it is unlikely to occur, if you get a painful, prolonged erection, stop using this drug and seek immediate medical attention. If you notice other effects not listed above, contact your doctor or pharmacist. So they didn't even know what all the side effects may be.
No, when it was prescribed to me, I was told that if I had I got together with my wife, and I quote, he didn't know that I was a bachelor. So if you get together with your wife, please get in touch with emergency if you have an erection that lasts for 4.5 hours.
So this is they could be selling this as under
as some Viagra,
Enzyte, or you know these. I can never remember the names of all.
And one of the things that blows me away is you hit the nail when you said drowsiness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, drowsiness, ladies and gentlemen, lack of appetite, energy, fatigue. I didn't know these symptoms. I have a friend that's on this stuff and for PTSD, and he went downhill. He just totally went downhill until I started reading what he was on. They want me to take this stuff? No, I'm taking it. I take it, and I bring it home. It sits on my table right here in front of me, so I'm taking it.
Yeah, you can go to medicine.net and read up on either of these two.
I know. I've got plenty of places to go.
You know, and I'm sure the physician's desk reference is loaded with pages on this stuff too.
I got a Marine here. Comes in by the Marine Corps chat room that's listening in. He's from Mexico, and he says, "Drew, tell him about the the cayenne pepper. He sent me a kilo of cayenne pepper up here. BTO cayenne pepper, BTO, ladies and gentlemen, is better than organic because it's grown by one specific person in their garden, in their farm, or their wherever, you know, and it's all range grown. It's not there's no chemicals of any kind. Anyway, he sends me a kilo of this cayenne pepper up here that's 10 times hotter than the cayenne pepper that you can get in the stores here. I mean, literally, I stuck my finger. When I first got it, I put my little pinky in there and dabbed a little bit on my pinky and put it to my tongue. I drank three glasses of milk before I got rid of that BS. And I don't drink milk. I don't have milk in my house. But I learned when I was a little boy that buttermilk takes care of when you bite into something that's got a lot of hot peppers. And I ran across the street to my next door neighbor over there and got into her buttermilk and drank 3 8-ounce glasses. I'll tell you, you're talking about hot. Yeah, it's hot. And all this prosaline is supposed to take your blood pressure and lower it. I found a way to clean my tubes out and take care of the blood pressure and the extra water weight. Mary Joan Mondello is my master herbalist, and she makes a dandelion tea that pulls water, excessive water off my system. And this cayenne pepper that I got from the southern Mexico, I made into caplets myself. I have a little caplet maker machine, and I made those up, and I started taking those for 2 weeks. It's been tomorrow will be 3 weeks. I shouldn't say tomorrow, today. I'm going to make 3 solid weeks, 3 times a day. My blood pressure went from 100. Now, sit down, ladies and gentlemen. Don't think I'm dying. 184 over 112. Now I'm down to 136 over 88 in 3 weeks.
That's a big change.
And you're talking about, and this is organic, taking care of yourself. This isn't big pharmaceutical. This is the problem we as Americans have got to understand. Big pharmaceuticals don't give a hoot in Hades. It's not about cure. It's about maintenance, period. You can go on YouTube, Don, and you can look up the lady's name is Gwen Olson, and you need to put Gwen on the air. Just if nothing else, pull her audio out there, because Gwen Olson was one of the top 10 pharmaceutical sales reps in the United States for 15 years. Well, not for 15 years, but when she retired or quit at 15 years, she was.
Mm-hmm.
She worked as a sales rep for 15 years. In her last 5 years, Don, she was the cat's meow, so to speak, of big pharmaceutical sales, making, are you sitting down, ladies and gentlemen, 7 figures income in a commission selling pharmaceutical medicines to doctors, mom and pop doctors, 7 figures. That's 6 zeros, ladies and gentlemen, with a 1, 2, or 3 at the beginning.
And now her message right now is what?
Don't take big pharmaceutical medications because they will kill you.
Interesting. And she's still alive to tell the story.
Wrote a book. Wrote 2 books. Wrote 1 book in the year 2000. Wrote the second book in 2005. She is the whistleblower, and they may want her. They may want her dead, but they killed her daughter. And that's what made her. That's what woke her up. Okay, because of the medications. unsuspecting Americans that are basically mired into the mental health system. And her daughter was taking these drugs, and the drugs were making her daughter worse and worse and worse. And finally, her daughter poured gasoline over herself and set herself on fire and burned herself to death.
My goodness.
That's because she couldn't, her daughter couldn't take it anymore. Okay? And it woke Gwen up. But it was a tragic way to be woken up.
Sure.
She thought she was doing the right thing, taking her daughter to one of her best doctors who was feeding, the doctor was feeding her the medications that she was promoting and pushing. So she's 100% against big pharmaceuticals now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, when you have the mindset that you're doing the right thing and it hits home with somebody in your family, of course, then you have to step back and say, wait a minute, this is what I've been selling. Seven figures. She's making millions of dollars at the end of her career. And she realizes that the money doesn't mean anything.
Now, there you go. That's the bottom line. She found out the hard way that what's more important was her children and not the money. There's a book out there. I think it was done by Robert Whitaker. Bad in America, Bad Science, Bad Medicine, and the Enduring Mistreatment of the Mentally Ill. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to read something that just turns your blood to a boiling temperature? Read Mad in America, Bad Science, Bad Medicine, and the Enduring Mistreatment of the Mentally Ill. It's at your local library. That's something we need to do. We need to grab some librarians and bring them on the show and let Americans re-educate themselves and learn that the American libraries and the American Librarian Association is still alive and well, and libraries are free. You can go check the book out. If they don't have the book in the system in that specific library, the library is only operated by the city, state, they will order the book in from the main library. It may take a week.
Yeah.
And if you don't like to sit down and read, ladies and gentlemen, you'd be totally surprised, Don, how many books they have in audio format in MP3. And you can play it on your MP3 player. You can play it on your Wave player. You can read a book as fast as somebody can read it to you.
Yeah, it started out as books on tape, and as they got into digital electronics, it became CD, video, and then eventually DVD. And a lot of this you can find on the internet if you have the patience to look.
And I want to tell you, there was a library up in Philadelphia that had. Eight millimeter?
Mm-hmm.
Eight millimeter tapes. Back in the 1960s, ladies and gentlemen, the library in Philadelphia had a set of 8 millimeter tapes that were so rare, they're extremely bad. I mean, we're talking about major value right there in a public library.
Yeah, they were called Super 8s at that time. Video cameras had those.
You could go to the library, and they had a video room they wouldn't let you check these things out. Okay, they wouldn't let you. You couldn't check out the material, but you had the video room was there,
mm-hmm.
And you could go and sit down and watch a video of different things. And we're talking about things Tom Lehrer. Tom Lehrer. Is that his name? Lehrer? Is that it? Lehrer? Tom Lehrer?
Jim Lehrer, I think you're.
Tom Lehrer. Well, here, I got a clip. You mind giving me about 98 seconds?
Can we negotiate? No, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to throw back 1964. Tom Lehrer was a comedian, and he's long lost. And somebody dug up and found 8mm renditions of his performances as a comedian, and they posted them on DVD. And now the DVDs are in every major library in America. And here's the type of music that he came, or entertainment, that was alive and well in 1964 that's been brought back to your attention. Here we go. Just boom, play it.
First you get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make do whatever steps you want if you have cleared them with the body. Everybody say you don't hear yay-a-lay-a-lay, do the Vatican rhyme. Step in line, not professional, step into that small confessional. There's the guy who's got religion, I'll tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer, drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8, time to transubstantiate. Get down upon your knees, get all of your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen, when in Rome do it like a Roman. Ave Maria, keep good to see ya. Keep it dramatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican.
Entertainment, ladies and gentlemen, that was lost in history was found in history. And the words there, that particular comedian was right on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should have mentioned Vatican Rag. Then I would have known you meant Tom Lehrer, the piano player, singer. So
he was a piano player.
Yeah.
Singer, comedian, and he traveled around the speakeasies doing his little rendition of what we would call today people like, what's the guy that snatches the watermelons?
Gallagher.
Gallagher. See, this guy would sit at a piano in a white shirt, a thin black tie, a coat. He would basically, he's in a black suit, and he would make fun of the government and bring out the truth. And today we get people like Gallagher get on a stage with a big hammer and a watermelon. And there's a couple other comedians out there. Some of them I don't like their trash mouth, but the truth, ladies and gentlemen, it's out there if you seek it in strange places. 8mm tape, 46 years ago, rediscovered in 2006 and placed on DVDs in 2008. And he's actually making a big comeback around America.
Now you wonder how many people can listen to that and figure out what the message was in
and that's a that's a term.
Yeah. You know, because he was mocking the Vatican in
right.
Last song. So.
Well, he mocked the pharmaceutical industry in the form or the I shouldn't say the pharmaceutical. He mocked the education industry in the form of sex education. He did one out there. I got it from Agnes. But there was never a sexual orientation that was even mentioned. It was in your mind that it was about the promiscuity that was going on in around the United States. But, you know, those are things that, that he tactfully brought out as a singer, as a songwriter, as a comedian, and one who has found a way to talk to the people that were where? In the nightclubs, drinking, and he was speaking truth. There were over 90 different programs found on 8 millimeter tapes in the at the public library, hidden on a shelf in the video room. And you can check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's on DVDs, and you can check the DVD out and take it home with you. We've come a long way with the library system, Don. We really have. The truth is out there if you want to learn it.
That is very true. I spent many, many days in libraries. They would even invite me to bring my lunch the following day if I wanted, you know.
Well, I spent so much time at the University of Arkansas Law Library that the librarian the librarian actually kidded me several times. I'm going to put a bed downstairs for you and let you be the night watchman.
Yeah. And you know, it's amazing how knowledgeable many of those people are that work there. You know, you think they're just there to, libraries have changed somewhat, you know, with the advent of the computer and, they limit the amount of information. They restrict certain websites from going to, you know, going into the system because they want to stifle the truth. And I hear about that quite a bit from people that do go to the library to look something up. Or they may go to the library to get on the internet and they go to a regular website.
Yeah.
And one that's putting out the truth and they begin to question, you know, they'll say things to the librarian like, I contribute to this library. Every year I donate a substantial amount of money. Why is it that when I come here I can't see certain websites?
And this is something that most Americans don't know. You can be from Schenectady, New York, or Bunky, Louisiana, traveling around the United States and stop into a little Hoboken, Virginia, population 200, library. Walk in the library and let the librarian know that you're just traveling through or you're visiting a sister or brother or cousin right there in town and you'd like to utilize their internet service. They want to see your driver's license to see if you are an American, number one, or where you're really from, number two. And they want to document who you are so you're not up there writing malicious emails and using their library to send it. But they'll let you on the internet service for free. You can walk around the library and read books. All there in the library. You can't check any out because you're not a citizen of the county. But they'll let you read the books there in the library free of charge. Why do I know this? Because I've done it. I've traveled and bored to death, and I do my due diligence to find a decent hotel in a proximity of a public library. Did it many times. You don't have to take my word for it. Ask Francis Stephen Hayes, the owner of American Voice Radio Network. He practically lived in libraries for over 10 years, living off the land. He knows the library system in and out in Hawaii and California. And the man has a wealth of knowledge in his head of learning from the library. What's happened to America, Don, is we're not being educated anymore. Maddie Mae Brown, my world American history teacher at C.E. Byrd High School, God bless that lady, drilled in our heads for us to research, learn the truth, do our own due diligence. And Mary Ponder, my biology teacher, Mrs. Ponder, taught us the wealth of information of the body and the fact that God put this body on this planet, and it's up to you to learn what your body needs for good health. She taught us biology the old-fashioned way with examples in the books of the old educators, not this newfound stuff of basic Scientology, a bunch of BS. I'm amazed, and, you know, here I am, 62 years old. I had a friend tell me the other day, I don't even look 50, and made the comment that as older generations, we still remember our high school teachers who made an implant on us. It's like Mary Ann Ponder, your friend and my friend, who was murdered here in Arkansas. I don't know. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care what the sheriff department says. This lady was murdered. She did her due diligence in going out and documenting stuff at the library after listening to your show, my show, Greg Evenson's show, and other shows on Republic Broadcast, BBS Radio. She would tune in to BBS Radio during the daytime and pick up shows and listen to them that were specific on the truth and the news out there, alternative news. And she made sure that she'd call me at night and say, don't forget, night's coming on in an hour. We're talking about 11 o'clock at night, ladies and gentlemen. She didn't have any fear about calling me at 11 o'clock at night and saying, Don's coming on in an hour. Great lady.
Yeah. Well, Drew, we're about out of time.
I got plenty of time. I don't know. I want to know, what do you sell your time?
Do I sell my time? No.
Yeah.
But when it runs out.
You're always running out of time. I don't know. Do you buy time somewhere? I mean, you're always running, and you're always out of time.
Well, the same thing happens to you on your show.
Oh, I don't run out of time. I just, after 2 hours of jab, I gotta take a break, man. I get hungry. Again, you know, the crown is the crown, the bottle over on the shelf with the crown in it, there's nothing in it. There's nothing. It's not an alcoholic beverage. I've got to go over and get me some lemon juice and water. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show. And ladies and gentlemen, you should be blessed to know that BBS Radio is out there doing their due diligence behind the scenes, and Don Newsom and the other guys that are out there doing all they can to make sure you get the truth. And that's something that most people don't think about, is to thank the people behind the scenes. And I appreciate it, Don. I really do.
Well, our listening audience contributed.
And I'm not talking to you, Don.
To the show tonight. I know. You're speaking about Don Newsom. Our listeners contributed as much to the show. And that shows you that they're paying attention. And they're out there doing what we suggest people do. We're not asking anyone to believe us. Just go out and do some cursory research. You don't have to do a lot of research. You can find these topics are also accessible to yourselves. And
let me interrupt you here. I got a pop up here from Stanley in Shreveport, Louisiana. Tell Don he can also go down to the library and watch the entire episodes of all the Rocky and Bullwinkle shows.
Yeah. Well, you can do that on TV too.
I got a television, but tune it in. I don't have any extra special equipment, and I will not purchase cable. No way. I'm sorry. Y'all can take that cable TV and put it up a tree for the squirrels.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you go back after doing research for a number of years, you go back and you watch Rocky and Bullwinkle, there were political messages in that cartoon as well.
I think that's what Stanley was trying to make
exactly.
The point here. You know, the Rocky and Bullwinkle shows, that whole series was a political oriented, for the college kids of that day in the 60s.
Yeah, we had Boris Badenov and Natasha.
I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't want to say anything. I got to bring that up with Larissa tomorrow.
I know. I could see her flinching when I said that.
Oh, man.
Oh, I mean, what was the reason for that? What was the reason for showing that to children, you know, when you think about it?
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't really geared to children. It was geared to the high school kids and college kids of the day as a political analyst and throwing the political atmosphere out to the young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boris and Natasha, man, I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, and if you haven't, those of you that are young, under about 45, you probably never saw Natasha and Rocky and Bullwinkle and Boris and what was that other one? The dog.
You're talking about another cartoon?
No, I think that on the Rocky and Bullwinkle show there was Mr. Know-It-All.
Yeah, Mr. Know-It-All and Sherman.
Sherman and Mr. Know-It-All, right. Sherman was the kid, and Mr. Know-It-All was the dog that had a Ph.D. in six degrees, different sections, six Ph.D.s, and he was a dog.
And he had a British accent.
With a British accent. Yeah. And then they had the little Dudley Do-Right episode within that, tacked in every once in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, the good old days. Well, thank you, Don. I really appreciate reminiscing with you, but I'm going to have to take a break here and go water my garden.
All right. Well, just watch out for the squirrels and the mooses in the meantime.
No, I got a possum that invaded my watermelons and my cantaloupes, and he's done a pretty good job on the cantaloupes. He's only hit two watermelons, but he did a pretty good job on the cantaloupes. I'm going to have to teach him a lesson with put me a little wire fence up. I don't really want to go out there and kill that sucker because he's just trying to survive.
Yeah. Well, A Marine's Disquisition is the name of the show, heard on Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com and your website, amd.elequity.com.
Alpha Michael Delta dot Echo Lima, Echo Quebec, Ulysses, India Tango Yankee .com. That's amd.elequity.com. And I appreciate it. Megan Love in Australia. Appreciate it. That's my website. It's located in Brisbane at the University of Australia. Nice people down there, John.
All right, Drew. Well, I wish you a good night, and I look forward to being on your show next Monday. So in the meantime, be safe. Get some rest. And stay away from that.
You want me to send a submarine over to pick you up for the show?
Yeah, why not?
They keep telling me every time I turn around that Ohio is going to be inundated with a tsunami, and the world's coming to an end. By the way, you noticed that all of that hoopla from Loudmouth out of Texas about Israel bombing Iran on the never came about.
Yeah, we
I think some of that has to do with the boys upstairs that on the intergalactical force putting a stop to that. So
and a lot of prayer too.
Lot of prayer.
A lot of people are praying, and it does. It does throw a wrench in the works, doesn't it?
Amen.
All right, Drew. Well, wish you a good night. Thanks for being on the show, and we'll see each other next week, folks. That wraps it up. We've been listening to Evident Footprints and tonight's special guest, Drew Malone Rains III. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting this show over at BBS Radio. I want to thank Don Newsom on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the archives of Evident Footprints, and guess what? You can get all the rest of the archives on BBS Radio along with those for a period of 1 year. Can't beat it. So join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.